don't tolerate bullshit terribly well. And I come from a different background than a lot of other people who run the country. I'm not good at backslapping. I'm not good at pleasantries. If you have your birthday, I'm not going to call you up to congratulate you, say you love me and you write nice things about me. That's not what I do. Never have. And I take that as a little bit of a criticism, self-criticism. I've been amazed at how many people respond to, happy birthday. Oh, Bernie, thanks so much for calling. You know, it works. It's just not my style. I try to stay focused on the important issues facing working families in this country, and I fight for them.
Yes, it is Friday, January 24th, 2020. Welcome to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Each week, I talk to our Capitol muckraker and chief, Sean Kitchen, about the good, the bad, and the ugly in the state and national politics. Today's show, yes, we are inching closer to Iowa. That will be February 3rd, TikTok, and it is getting nasty online. Shoo! Bernie tops the national polls for the first time, seems to be widening his lead in New Hampshire, and it's a toss-up in Iowa between Bernie and Biden. I wonder if that has anything to do with the nastiness of the polls. I'm not exactly sure, but whatever. It's anybody's guess. And Hillary says she won't commit to support Sanders if he wins the Democratic nomination. Where have I heard that criticism before? I don't remember. New York Times makes an editorial board endorsement fail. How about which way did you go? Which way did you go? Which way did you go? Right? Kate McAlevey was on the Majority Report this week talking about organizing the workplace and forming unions for direct action and power. And her new book, Collective Bargain, tells it all. And it is out, folks. Katie Halper on Michael Moore's Rumble podcast talks about the quiet anti-Semitism of the anti-Bernie media. And, dun-dun-dum, the riveting impeachment continues. I don't know if any watched it. Not so much. In today's local focus, videos of former Lieutenant Governor Mike Stack have been making the rounds. Turns out he moved to, I'm going to wait. You're going to have to stick around to this one because this is good. This is good. All I got two words for you. Mikey Stacks. Mikey Stacks, everybody. Mikey Stacks. And Mike Terzai announced that he is not running for re-election in 2020. Might have a little too much gas. Oh.
Some Pepto
in that butt. And Kutztown University is looking to cutting up to 63 faculty members. Yes, that is based upon a quote-unquote analysis released to the faculty union last Friday while we were recording this podcast. Right? I'm freaking mad about it, as you can imagine. So Sean gets to take a nap once again. He's like praying right now. Star Trek's in today's last call, Star Trek's Picard debuted on CBS All Access yesterday. Love it! I don't care what Entertainment Weekly says. Fuck them. And next week, I will be on at Kutztown University Radio. I'm going to be on a show called Emmy Knows. Next Wednesday from 10 to 11, we're going to talk about podcasting. We're going to talk about progressive media. And anything else that might come up. So from what I understand, what Emmy told me is the recording will be available afterwards. So if you can't tune in live, I'm going to ask about posting it right up on our feed, too. So if you want to check that out, you can. Free Will is having its first Sour Sunday of the new decade this Sunday from 11:30 to 8 p.m. at the brewery in Perkasie. And as part of that Sour Sunday, they'll have two new releases. Well, one's kind of a new release, one's not. One, My Wild Love, that is a spontaneous sour ale aged in oak casks with blue free plums from Weiser Orchards. And I'll tell you a little bit about that. It comes in at about 4.3 ABV, so kind of a nice light one, but it's a freaking good one. And they've got the last of this vintage of Peachy McPeachface. Which is awesome. Now, that has been bottled and conditioned for over 2 years now. And from what they're saying, this is probably going to be the last of this vintage. And it was so amazing when it was first came out. It was excellent the year after. And now the last of it is ready to go. That comes in at 5.7 ABV and is awesome. And Kitchen's Cabinet is bringing in the bank. Yeah. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, Kitchen's Cabinet. We'll tell you about how to subscribe to that and help with Sean's grift. There we go. I want to remind everybody to tune into the Rick Smith Show on Free Speech TV this and every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern. You can stream the show live at freespeech.org. You can also tune in on the Dish Network, DirecTV, or through the Free Speech TV app on Roku. And make sure you download the Rick Smith Show's daily podcast on iTunes, Podbean, or wherever you get your podcasts. He also actually streams live on Twitter. I got to put that in the plug because every night it goes live and he streams it live on Twitter. And so you definitely check him out there. Want to remind everybody, if you want a progressive future, you need progressive media. I don't know how to underscore that more, but you can help support Cold No Punches homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. Really, $5 a month. It's like a beer a month, right? We're not trying to break the bank here, but $5 a month goes a long way. We are expanding our network as we prepare for the fight for our lives, the fight for the future in 2020. We're all in for the fight, and now we need you. We're not asking you to break the bank. We're asking you to become a member for the price of a good beer once a month, like I just said. I don't know why I'm repeating myself. Help keep the media in the movement in the media. Become a member for as little as $5 a month by going to patreon.com/rcpress today. Hey, Sean, man, welcome back. Welcome back to another kind of week dominated by the news of impeachment. How you been?
I'm fucking great.
You seem to be in good spirits this morning, I have to say.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm pretty good. It's been quite a fun week.
It's been a fun week. Sean has been let's say he's been very active on social media this week. And there's been lots of stuff happening in the Capitol, which we're going to get all into that because that's fun. So you got to stick around for the second segment today, folks, because we got some good stuff for you. We got some good sound for you this week, right? We're getting closer to Iowa, and we're just, what, was it 2 weeks out? Less than 2 weeks out now?
Yeah, less than 2 weeks. Right? So it's like next week or now?
No, 2 weeks. So, it's a week and 4 days, right? 10 days. Okay. So it's the third. So, 1 week, 10 days. Yep, 10 days away. On February 3rd, and I tell you, I'm very much looking forward to the actual caucuses in Iowa, because I'm getting a little fed up with the crap online. I think there's people going off the rails, and I'm not targeting one group. I'm just saying there are supporters of the campaigns. It's highly pressurized. The fact that I think Bernie is climbing in the polls, and now there's a real chance that he's at least a contender for the nomination. I'm not going to go as far to say that, look, he's got this locked up or something, but that's causing things to just go nuts.
So first of all, I love the sound clip of Bernie in the beginning. everyone knows he's an asshole. But also, I mean, like, you kind of have to be an asshole to get like this far in politics. It's not a thing of like being nice. Like, yeah, you can be nice, but like, it's
happy birthday.
But I mean, like, if people are going to come out and say, like, Bernie's an asshole. Like, okay, what's that going to do? Like, I don't take people's bullshit.
Yeah, I don't tolerate bullshit. I don't tolerate bullshit.
I mean, like, yeah,
that's going in like a permanent sound drop. That and happy birthday.
Yeah. But no, I mean, it's been interesting watching some of the debates that's been happening online this week. I mean, I think a really good debate sparked up over the past couple of days. So Sanders got endorsed pretty much by Joe Rogan, and Sanders you know, made that into a campaign ad, which pissed off a bunch of people.
Yeah.
And, like, I think that is very ignorant, not in a disparaging way, but it is a very ignorant position to, like, call all of Joe Rogan's listeners alt-right, racist, and so on. Like, these are disaffected, apolitical people, and these are voters you should be finding. But it's also the type of thing, I mean, like, we look at it from, like, we were talking about this, like, it's, like, organizing people, too. It's, like, yeah, like, these people may not be agreeing with us, but it's also the type of thing, do you let them go unchallenged and let them get red-pilled on a platform like that, or do you try to organize and reach across? And it's amazing watching the arguments and the fighting that's happening about this. Like, there's a whole group of people who are like, just screw the Rogan listeners and let them go. And I just think that's a very detrimental mistake.
Yeah.
Because these are people probably, you know, if you bring them into the process, you're going to prevent them from getting radicalized by the right and stuff like that. And, you know, I feel I don't listen to Rogan.
Yeah, neither do I.
And it's the type of thing where it seems like he's gotten a bit more responsible over the past several months, like, by leveraging, what's that?
I wouldn't know. I have no idea.
Like, but the shit that, like, pops up in my YouTube feeds on the sidebars, like with Sam Cedar and Pac-Man and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like, he is bringing on people like Pac-Man. He is bringing on, for what it's worth, he brought on Jimmy Dore. But, like, and, but, like, I don't know. I mean,
well, look, I look at it like this. I mean, I think, you know,
like, there are groups of people we're not going to agree with and not going to talk to, but, like, it's, do we cast those people aside completely and say, screw it, we don't need their votes? Or it's, I don't know.
Like, I go back to this, right? I remember when I was, you know, I'd been involved with activism for a long time, right? And political activism in particular in, you know, solidarity networks with, you know, El Salvador and people of El Salvador and Nicaragua and Central America during, say, the Reagan and Bush eras, where they were kind of funding, you know, dictatorships and death squads to kind of suppress a kind of, you know, democratic socialist kind of uprisings and stuff like that. Right. So, and when I, starting in college with punk rock and then moving in, or before college in punk rock, and then into college when I started reading Marx and getting involved with some socialist organizations like Solidarity and things like this, it's where I began to kind of, like, hone kind of an ideological position, right? And then would start kind of fighting for that ideological position. And then as years kind of went on, and I got kind of first a union job, and then I started doing some organizing work, in particular in Washington, D.C., when I was an adjunct faculty member down there, I had to confront something, right, when we were actually doing union organizing. And I had to deal with the fact, right, and I tell you, but be honest with you, it was not easy, right, to deal with the fact of saying, I am not trying to go and talk to somebody and convince them to kind of, like, to join a union and sign a union card based upon some sort of ideological like test, right? Is like the goal was to build a union so that you actually have a say in your workplace, a democratic say in your workplace, and then you have power as a collection of workers, right? And that meant that I had to take, say, the ideological purity stuff, right, or the ideological reason about why I'm in a union, why how union fits in my leftist politics, and had to kind of decenter that, right, and really focus on building power, right? And that meant, right, talking to people that in some cases, I don't even know where they stood, but in some cases, I definitely would not agree with. Like, I remember I was talking to this one guy. He was actually he was an adjunct faculty member, but he was like a former ambassador, right? So, like, I went to his office, you know, it was like office hours. I didn't know who this guy was. I'd go in and it was like this guy in his suit, and he's like, hold on a minute, he's getting calls from NPR with comments about, like, this war. I'm like, oh shit, the hell's going on? But he's a guy that was, you know, he's probably a Democrat, right? But he was much more kind of, like, centrist, right? He was very critical of stuff. And my conversation with him was not about all that stuff I heard on the phone, right? But it was about, listen, this is why we're kind of forming this union. This is why we want you to join for power. And that was the conversation that we had, right? And I think there's a similar dynamic here. And I have to say this too as well. I mentioned Kate McAlevey's book, kind of in the Majority Report. And she was on the Majority Report this week talking about her book, but she was talking more about the challenge of organizing right now, especially in the Trump era. And, you know, she got asked by Sam Cedar asked a question basically, well, you know, there's people that are going to be critical. Is this the only way, or is this the right way? And she said, and I agree with this, you know, she's just freaking the sage when it comes to union organizing to begin with. But, you know, she basically said that what else do we have? Right. I mean, it's not just that this is the right way. It's the only way. Right. We can no longer rely on the courts. Right. Donald Trump and Mitch McConnell have basically put a record number of federal judges appointed for a lifetime on the bench, which means an entire generation down the tubes. So the one mythology about the Supreme Court coming to save us all, like, you know, that was the kind of narrative that I grew up with, the Supreme Court, the good Supreme Court of the civil rights movement. No, we've got the Supreme Court of the Lochner era, right? We got the Supreme Court of the 1920s now. And that's going to have wide-ranging effects. And we've got a political system which is dominated by huge corporate money, right? That is going to be a constant push on that. We've got gerrymandered states, and we've got a kind of electoral college that people are very comfortable with, that is going to keep a minority in power, right? Without this mass organizing. And so her point was, like, number one, it is the only way we have. And she went through the series of strikes that, you know, that has taken place. Numbers of strikes have increased kind of pretty consistently during the Trump era. And the other part of it was, and she said, look, it is one of the few spaces that we have left where we are not just talking to people who already agree with us. Right. That we are actually out there having to say, you know, I don't care if I like this person, if this person is a good person, right, or is like a nice person, or they share my politics. Right. The goal is to build organized power. Right. And when you build organized power, right, you can't apply ideological purity test to kind of anything. Right. You can argue for that position. And there's spaces for that. But if the goal is to win. Right, then we've got to really check that kind of that sensitive. So anyways, that's kind of some of the things I see playing out online and coming out, and exactly in this case when you're talking about the Joe Rogan. Right? And, you know, I have to say, it's like when I think
most of his views are abhorrent, disagreeable stuff he's done in the past. Like, I'm not listening to Rogan at all. I think it, like, I am not going to own up. Like, I've listened to certain interviews, they're more apolitical stuff, mm-hmm. but I feel like his political views are pretty fucked up. I think he hits things out of the ballpark every once in a while, but it's like
that's the kind of thing you spit in the wind, eventually you're going to hit something, right? I mean, that's the, you know.
Yeah. But like it's also the type of thing where he has a platform with millions of listeners. Like, what is the best way of de-escalating someone who might be getting radicalized,
right,
like towards the alt-right? You talk to them one-on-one. You don't like kick the shit out of them at a rally, which is what some people like think what the Antifa does. A lot of the Antifa stuff, anti-fascist organizing, is actually talking to people and convincing them, getting them onto your side. And it's just like, I feel like the same thing applies here. The arguments like this is making it dangerous to organize in left spaces. No, I don't see that. Like, you know what I mean? And it's like, okay, so do you want to build a union of just leftists and that's it? Because if you do that, you have like 10 people or 5 people.
Well, that's
like
the 5%.
Yeah, like.
Exactly.
And you have just a bunch of radicals or anything, or you build a broad based power.
Well, okay, so you have on the one hand, you've got a group on the left, which is exactly what you're saying, right? Just kind of. We only want kind of these committed leftists with these particular kind of socialist or Marxist principles or whatever you want to say, right? So you've got this kind of angle. And then there's also I'm using it as an example. I'm not saying it's the only example. Just want to be clear to everybody out there. And then you've got another group of people that where kind of liberal politics has to do with an affect, right? It has to do with a kind of the way that what you carry yourself through the world. And I would argue that a lot of that has to do with, say, the Democratic Party and the kind of the liberal left, the shift toward the professional class, like we were talking a little bit about before on the show today, right? And, you know, we've talked about...
And most of the people who are upset with Rogan mm-hmm. doing this, or Bernie doing this with Rogan, are the white-collar professional class liberals who are not part of a working-class movement. And it's just like, it's amazing seeing like the disconnect between the people who are working class Democrats, you know, who want to organize broad-based movements versus like the your more educated professional white collar liberals.
Right.
Who want to ditch Rogan and anyone who even thinks about going onto his show or listens to his podcast aside, throw them into the void and act like they don't exist.
Right.
Which is absolutely detrimental.
Well, I agree. And this is, you know, and Glenn Greenwald, whatever you think of Glenn Greenwald, right? Glenn Greenwald was on, what was it? Useful Idiots, Matt Taibbi and Katie Halper's podcast, right? And he was talking about someone's reporting in Brazil because, I mean, people – I'm not going to go into that whole story, but he and his team broke, like, huge story, right? Now he's directly being targeted by the Bolsonaro government in part because of that reporting. But anyways, he's one of these people. Personally, I'll put my cards on the table. Right? He, like pisses me off to no end on several different things. Like, I think that his corrective to say, for example, the whole Russiagate stuff, his corrective is too far in the other, like going in the other direction about, oh, it was all, this is all just a hoax for the Democrats is kind of where he lies, but whatever, we can get that another time. But he was talking about this exact thing about the criticism that he faced for example, for going on Tucker Carlson show. Right. About going on Tucker Carlson and making the kind of an argument about stuff. And people would say to him, look, you're just being used by Tucker Carlson. Right. And Glenn Greenwald's like, yes, I am. Right. But you know what? I'm using that platform, too, as well, because it's not. Yes, he's got his agenda. Right. He said, but if I'm going on and I'm talking about a particular story, right, I'm not trying to keep my, you know, keep my access to Tucker Carlson. What I'm doing is kind of I'm making my case there. Right. I'm making my case there. And of course he's using it. But the point is that you've got an audience. Right. And the audience is what's important. Right. And the audience, unless you want to say that every single person that watches Fox News or everyone who watches Joe Rogan show needs to be written off. If you're going to say there's a range of folks out there, then Greenwald was making the same case. Then you need to be arguing there. It doesn't mean that you have to kind of make excuses for Tucker Carlson. Right. That's not a good thing. Just like the same thing. Like, just because, say, if I'm supporting Bernie Sanders and now Joe Rogan has come out and endorsed Bernie Sanders, it doesn't mean that me and Joe Rogan are kind of on the same team. And therefore, Bernie Sanders is an alt-right kind of fascist, you know, something like this. That's not how it works. That is like petty politics. When you're organizing for power, you're thinking about what's your access. How do you gain access to the widest amount of people? And you know, yes, I would draw particular lines, right? I think actually, frankly, I think...
I mean, there's probably people in your union that you do not like.
Oh, I could give you lists, right?
Yeah, but like, they're still your union members, and without them, you lose power.
Well, and there's the thing is, right? It's like,
and
look,
it's like, I mean, it's, yeah, like, and there are probably people who are not great people within that union personally, like, who are assholes, sons of bitches, and stuff like that, like, who are pricks, and who are just outright horrible human beings, but those are also people you're going to have to rely on them if a strike happens, you know, like if they're going to be a committed member walking the line with you. And like, that's, it's, I don't know. I mean, like it's, you need, it's amazing. Like the arguments it's like breaking down here, like with like between the Warren and Bernie crowd, where it's like, it seems like a lot of people in the Warren crowd are upset with like the union organizing or movement organizing tactics that Sanders is doing to build a broad-based coalition. By maybe like depending on people, or I'm not going to say depending on people, but like trying to reach to people who Democrats have never reached out to. I mean, like it's, I don't know. I had a really interesting conversation with someone at the bar last night who was a libertarian, works at state government, doesn't agree with me on anything, but he's probably going to be voting for Bernie Sanders. Like, yeah, I would rather have that person who I'm going to disagree with on pretty much everything. But you know what? Sanders has a message, and it's a winning message, and we can't have what the Republicans are doing. And this is a libertarian saying this.
No, right. And if we recognize the reality of our political system, right, the reality of our political system is that we do have an either-or choice, right? And that I will agree with every single person out there who says, we need a third party, we need a third party. I have this conversation with my friend Stu, right, over in Northern Ireland, right? This has been an ongoing conversation between me, my friend Ben, and my friend Stu for years, right, about the Democratic Party, right? And should we be supporting the Democratic Party or not? So, and my argument is always this, right? Theoretically, we need a third party, right? The time to build a third party, right, is after any election. That's when it's got to start, right? Because, you know, the way that third parties have worked in this country thus far is that you have somebody who steps in a presidential cycle, right, and then tries to kind of run a third party. The third party stuff you're having now, kind of what DSA is doing now, actually, to be honest with you. What DSA is doing at a local level and building power on up, that's actually what it means to build a party, right? And this, for the first time in my lifetime, that's actually starting to happen. But set that aside. And that's exactly kind of what we have here. It's like we have a series of very, say, of not perfect choices. And I'll have to say this, and I have to say that, look, I will give a lot of leeway to people, the kind of intensity of the kind of online discussions. That doesn't mean that I'm going to excuse kind of any kind of misogyny or anti-Semitism or anything like that, right? But I'm saying it's that I understand why people, especially if they're associated with the campaigns, right, the level of intensity that they're at this point. I mean, you're talking 10 days out from Iowa, right? That it's getting real, right? Sanders has been climbing in the polls, right? Warren has either kind of has been losing some ground or has been kind of remaining at that kind of particular level. And if I was working on the Warren campaign right now, I'd be extraordinarily frustrated. And yes, some of that is because of misogyny. I'm not saying misogyny because of Bernie Sanders, right? I said, you know, there's because you've got enough people out there, like some of our freaking major media outlets, right, which they don't say it directly when it comes to Elizabeth Warren, right? But you start hearing this little peep about, well, can is she electable? And that is just code for, and when it comes to Elizabeth Warren, that is code for she's a woman, is a woman electable, right?
And so I think Warren is absolutely 100% electable.
Totally, absolutely, 100%.
Yeah.
I mean, like I said, I said for a while, I'm supporting both of those candidates, right? And to this day, I will still say that. However, and I'll tell you, for me, what's tipped things a little bit more towards, say, okay, no, I'm got to go all in for Bernie, is that the waffling on Medicare for All when it came from Warren, that really upset me. Because that, from number one, not only is it politically, that is a winning issue, right? And then if you talk to anybody under 40, right, that is like number one issue at the top, like right at the top of the scale. And in order for that to actually be a winning issue when it comes to the general election, it's got to be as straightforward and clean as it could possibly be. The minute you start getting into all this technical speak of kind of stages and kind of the ways that we roll this stuff out, what people hear in their head is, I remember Obamacare. That was a freaking disaster. I'm not going through that. My Medicare coverage right now, I'm paying through the wheel. No. Right. They're going to distrust it. Right. And so that, for me, just at a political level, that becomes absolutely important. Right. And it also worries me about some of the people that are influencing her campaign. But that's, you know, again, we get there. The big point for me is that, look, it's like eyes on the prize here, folks. Right. We can have all the politics, you know, political disagreements and discussions as possible about who we should be supporting. Right. And you want to support Warren? Awesome. I'm going to support you in that. Right. I'm going to support Bernie. OK, you know, support me in that. Right. And we'll go out. We'll kind of have that kind of campaign. But the kind of the intensity of like the hatred and the shit that's going on, that's going to kind of reinforce personal grudges among people can be detrimental to winning the general, right? Whoever gets the nomination, right? It's already, I'm going to tell you right now, if it's going to be Joe Biden to get that nomination, there's going to be a lot of people that Bernie supporters and Warren supporters are going to have to do a ton of work to convince them to even freaking vote, right? Yeah. So, I mean, I think that's what we got to be thinking about here.
Yeah. Speaking about attacks. Hillary Clinton opened up her mouth again.
Hillary Clinton. Yeah. What the fuck?
like the thing is, it's type of thing where it's amazing how, like, you lost the election to Trump. I don't think you get to be able to opine about Sanders like 4 years later. Like, is she that? it's amazing that she's still like that upset at Bernie Sanders.
Well, look, I think she genuinely believes, right, that Bernie cost her the election. So let's just talk about a couple things here, right? So let's remember, despite what Hillary Clinton says, right, that Bernie didn't support her, Bernie did over 40 campaign events.
Was barnstorming the country for her.
Right.
After the convention.
He did over 40 events, right, for Hillary Clinton and campaigning for her around the country, right? And guess where the bulk of those were? Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, places where Hillary Clinton did not go, right, in her campaign, right? And you talk to people on the ground in Michigan, and some of those Democratic operatives there, they were saying like, oh, no, we're worried if Hillary Clinton comes, it's just going to get the Trump people more upset. So they said, don't come. So Hillary Clinton did not go to those places. Bernie Sanders did. 40 events, right? When Barack Obama got the nomination, right? When Barack Obama got the nomination and he defeated Hillary Clinton in the Democratic primary, right? How many events did she do for Barack Obama? You know that, Sean?
How many?
She did 10 by herself and 2 with him. So a total of 12 events. Right? 12 events. Right? So Bernie basically quadrupled the number of events in supporting of her than she did for Barack Obama. Right. So let's just talk about that, what it means to actually support a candidate. So the guy who was criticized of not being a Democrat, of being a socialist, of stumping, of like seeking campaign, staying in the campaign too long. I wonder how long she stayed in the campaign.
To the convention.
Yeah, it's about. But see, I mean, again, it's a freaking double standard. And the thing is that what drives me insane, right, is like, look.
Like, this is actually something that could sink a presidential race.
Exactly. Like, because it's stoking up the kind of like, first of all, she can think what she wants, right? But we know in Pennsylvania, we know, right, that people, and, you know, Michael Moore talked about this on his podcast on Rumble too as well. He said in Michigan, you could not get a Hillary yard sign because they didn't have offices. And that was true in Pennsylvania too as well. I mean, I remember, right? I mean, I supported Bernie, right, in the primary, but as soon as like it was clear, Hillary's got the nomination, boom, right? Switch over. Okay, let's get Hillary elected, right? And we called. My wife called. I called to try to get yard signs, Hillary signs. No, we don't have any. When are they coming? We don't know, right? The campaign won't tell us, right? We know the on-the-ground, there was huge problems in there. Now, does that mean that there's nothing to be said about kind of like burning the campaign? No, right? Maybe that did have a marginal effect. But you know what also had a marginal effect? Right? Being called out by Jim Comey, right, about her email stuff, about not having kind of an adequate on-the-ground operation, right, by screwing up their data analysis and basically sending out their get-out-to-vote machine out to get Trump voters to the polls. Right? I mean, the fact that she is so focused on Bernie Sanders as the sole cause of all this is just bad. And for her to basically say that she will not commit to supporting Bernie Sanders if he wins a Democratic Party nomination. I mean, are you kidding me?
It shows you that there's a wing of the Democratic Party who are very wealthy. They would much rather watch Sanders lose and have 4 more years of Trump, or maybe a Trump dictatorship, they would be okay with like marching down that road as long as Sanders loses.
Yeah, it's freaking nuts.
Yeah.
So remember, everybody, right? For everyone who says that, you know, has this freaking litmus test that now they love to do on the even in the debate stages. Will you commit to supporting the Democratic nominee? Right. Guess what? That means if Bernie Sanders does get the nomination, right, you're in, right? It doesn't apply to only Sanders supporters, right? It means that you have to be out there campaigning for Bernie Sanders. No, exactly. And if you're a Sanders supporter and Elizabeth Warren gets the nomination, you damn well better be out there campaigning for her.
Yeah.
Right? And vice versa. All that right across the ball. And let me just say, there's a really interesting point that Katie Halper was on Michael Moore's Rumble podcast this week, right? And just yesterday, I think it was posted. And she made a really important point, which I think people need to kind of take to heart. Is that you know, all this focus on Bernie Sanders, just on all the Bernie bros crap, right? And again, I hate the fact we have to kind of constantly say this, but yes, there's some real freaking assholes online, right, that have been associated with the Bernie campaign insofar as they're publicly saying that I support Bernie Sanders, right? They've been assholes, but okay, let me just set the list out, right, about how many assholes there are online, okay? Let's just be clear. Right, so,
I'm one of them.
Right, well, Sean's one of them, right? I mean, he wears his banner proudly, too, as well. But so, and what Katie Halper said is that one of the things that you're, if you start talking to people in the campaign, right, in the Bernie Sanders campaign, like we've talked about this in the podcast, too, as well. The Bernie Sanders campaign has the strongest and most diverse coalition, right, has the youngest one, has more people of color than any other coalition, right, on its kind of campaign staff and its organizers and things like this, right? And it's like, I don't know about you, but every time I run into a Bernie, like a Bernie campaign or an event that's going on, it's not all guys, right? As a matter of fact, a lot of the people in the leadership positions are women of color. And they're starting to and you'll start to see this creep out a little bit online. But what Katie Halper was making the point is when she was talking and doing for kind of interviewing people and things like this, is that those women of color, right, and kind of and working class women and things like that are starting to get a little pissed, right, at the Bernie bro argument, because they feel that what it's doing is erasing them from their campaign.
And it's also Sanders' campaign is the only campaign to actually run a grassroots movement that's like building power within the Latinx community.
Yep.
Communities. It's yeah, no, it's just like it's astounding.
Yeah, and I think that's absolutely super important that people remember that, is that if you look at the people who are actually working and volunteering on that campaign, it is one of the most diverse coalitions we've seen in history, probably since the Rainbow Coalition and Jesse Jackson.
What's funny is it's like, speaking out the Bernie bros, I have a couple of friends who are staffers, female staffers within the legislature, who are Sanders supporters. And when anything like that pops up, you're like, yep, Bernie bro right here.
That's just what Katie Halper says. That's what she says. She's like, I'm claiming it, right? You know,
like,
I'm claiming the Bernie bro. I'm a Bernie bro.
It's. I don't know. It's kind of been like it's amazing. Like, I guess it feels like we're back at the. It's like that Lord of the Rings. It's
yes,
like that Lord of the Rings
Sean
analogy.
Has watched him, yeah.
I did see Star Wars a couple weeks ago, so.
Yeah, I know, man. That's freaking crazy. So anyways, so that's kind of that. So, I mean, that's kind of kicking up. I think once we get to Iowa, I think that's going to help clarify some things, right? And clarify in what way? I don't know. We'll see. There are caucuses, and there's all the polling that's happened. I mean, we got to remember the polling from last time, so who the hell knows? Yes, Sanders, we saw his campaign tweet this stuff out, right? It was first time in the national polls that he topped Joe Biden, came in at 27 versus Joe Biden's 24%, but the next poll that came out had Biden back on top. So we don't know what's going to happen. National polls anyways are garbage because we don't vote nationally, right? If we voted nationally, Hillary Clinton would be president right now and not Donald Trump. So we know that.
That's the other thing someone put up in their argument this week. That Hillary won the popular vote.
Well, she did.
I was like, congrats.
Yeah, I mean,
she won the popular vote, but I'm not going to change the outcome of what happened.
Right, exactly. I mean, it's like, and so both of those things could be like, that is a fundamental injustice. There's no doubt about it. All the more reason we need to get rid of the Electoral College. You need to boot that, right? So then the big question, who's going to get rid of the Electoral College? Right? You know, like, how do we actually build to make sure that happens?
Yeah.
Right? Because this has happened twice now, right? This happened with Al Gore, and this happened with Hillary Clinton, right? So there we go. Anyways, last thing before we go to a break, impeachment's going on. Have you been glued to the screen?
There ain't no saviors coming for you.
No.
Let's just put that out there, okay? There's no Republican savior stepping up.
Nope.
Let's stop asking for it.
Yep.
Let's stop asking for, like, a Supreme Court justice to step up, because that ain't happening either.
Yep.
So,
I mean, I do like, I like, look, Michael Moore has been on his Rumble podcast. He's probably one of the only kind of consistent voices that that has an argument for impeachment that actually makes sense. Right. And about, you know, a realistic assessment of kind of what it would take to remove him from office. Right. And has actually been pushing people to actually call in the, and call senators and things like that. And he's doing that. Right. But he's under no illusions that this is going to be this magically happen or something like that. But there is something to be said about making it as uncomfortable as possible for all those senators to vote. Not to remove Trump from office, right, or to dismiss this case entirely. So whatever. But I mean, I'm not particularly hopeful that that's going to happen, right? I'm maybe too cynical about this, but we'll see. You know, it was a brilliant move by Mitch McConnell, basically, to move these hearings to kind of late in the day and overnight, because, like, practically speaking, there's no way I'm going to sit down and file, you know, I don't have the time. I've got a job, you know, I don't have the time to sit there and watch the impeachment hearings all day, all night long, especially when I got kids, I got to make dinner, I got stuff, activities going on. Right. So if it was, they were during the day, that I could come in, I could watch the news at nighttime and I could get the summation of kind of what was going on. But even that news summation is kind of like postponed to the following day because of when it's taken. So whatever. I mean, so, you know, trying to make sense of what's going on and, but that's about it. And, Let's get back to work organizing for the 2020. I mean, I think that's what we got to do. So, anyways, anything else for the good of the order for this part, Sean?
No.
All right, man. Let's get on with it. All right, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. I want to remind you that you can support this podcast and all the things we do at Raging Chicken Media by going to patreon.com/RCPress and become a member for as little as $5 a month. We'll be back right after this quick break.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1984. That was the day the Nestle Corporation agreed to terms in order to end a 7-year international boycott against the company. The boycott was over the unsafe and dangerous ways that Nestle marketed and sold its baby formula in third world countries. The boycott began in the United States in Minneapolis, Minnesota. It spread abroad to Canada, Australia, and New Zealand, eventually reaching 10 countries. The campaign was largely grassroots in nature, with local activists organizing different actions. In Massachusetts, boycotters ceremoniously dumped Nestle products in a Boston Nestea party. Finally, after 7 years, the grassroots organizing met its goal. Nestle agreed to follow international standards for baby formula marketing. Boycotts are an important way for consumers and workers to protest corporate practices and social injustice. There have been several very influential boycotts in our nation's history. In the 1950s, the Montgomery bus boycott challenged racial discrimination in one southern city and helped to launch the civil rights movement and empower a generation to fight for equality. In the 1960s, Cesar Chavez and Dolores Huerta of the United Farm Workers called for a boycott of grape and lettuce growers in California. That boycott helped to bring national attention to the fight to improve pay and working conditions for Latino farm workers in California. In the 1980s, a campaign against goods made in South Africa was a stand against that country's apartheid system. In 1984, the members of the International Longshore and Warehouse Union Local 10 refused to unload a South African ship in the port of Oakland. Their action stood as a powerful statement of international worker solidarity for racial justice. Boycotts have long helped to change the course of history as citizens stand together in solidarity.
You know, like I'm at Starbucks, the 4 or 5 beautiful kids come in, you know, and not looking at each other, not talking to each other, posting, texting, FaceTiming, Skyping, playing fucking games, all sit down. Somehow they got their coffee, you know, which was a fucking obnoxious caramel cappuccino, macchiato mocha, espresso, motherfucking ridiculoso, finte.
There you go, everybody. Yes, yes, yes. That's Mike Stack, everybody. Or should I say Mikey Stacks.
stand-up comedian Mikey Stax to you.
Oh my god.
So, like, this was the second biggest breaking news story this week. The other one was Gritty punching.
Oh my god, that was crazy. That was absolutely freaking crazy. Can we just let you just hear it one more time?
You know, like, I'm at Starbucks, four or five beautiful kids come in, you know, and not looking at each other, not talking to each other, posting, texting, FaceTiming, Skyping, playing fucking games. All sit down. Somehow they got their coffee, you know, which was a fucking obnoxious caramel cappuccino, macchiato mocha, espresso, motherfucking ridiculoso, finte.
I think, like, what makes this so funny is that it's not funny and it's just cringy.
Dude, it's like, I said before the show, it's like, I swear to God, it's like, this is like what, like, a backyard picnic in my hometown of Utica was like, right? This is not stand-up. This is just like backyard conversation, right? You got that one freaking uncle who's always like, ah, you get off my lawn, you freaking kids, you know? It's like, that's all it is.
I guess he didn't take losing the Fetterman that well.
No. So, yes, our former lieutenant governor on definitely some kind of midlife thing going on, moved out. Well, you tell the story.
I mean, he moved out to California. He's doing stand-up comedy. He has a backstage profile set up with, like, headshots. I mean, like, he almost looks like Mark Price, but, like, 30 pounds lighter. But no, I mean, like,
he's got blonde freaking hair now.
Yeah, was that like his actual hair color?
I don't know. Who the hell knows? Maybe. Hey, that's true, because he used to dye his hair black, right?
I don't know, but at least he ditched the makeup.
Oh my god! Just,
there's a 5-minute video.
Yeah.
On his it's absolutely worth watching. It is just like.
Yeah,
I'll
put links in the show notes for that, guys, because I could not put more of it in for this, because I just would have lost it. I not would have been able to gain my composure. That's really about it.
No, it was pretty good.
So I just want to publicly thank Sean for bringing that to my attention this morning, because that just really made my day.
Oh, absolutely. You're welcome.
Mikey Stax, everybody. Mikey Stax. Oh, so this is a shout out. I don't know if Nate Banditelli still listens to the podcast. I know he's been a supporter. I supported his podcast. But Nate was a former student of mine, kind of turned into an organizer. And now he does stand up, actually. He's been doing stand up now for a while out in California. So, Nate, any chance you're listening to this, you might want to kind of touch base with some Pennsylvania homie, Mikey Stax. So, you go. Oh man. So what else we got going on in Pennsylvania, Sean?
Nothing really.
Nothing really. I think there's like, wait.
Did you know that?
Mm-hmm. I did.
I bet you didn't.
Just remember.
You don't really care about the kids. What you care about is a monopoly and special interest. So.
Yeah, some of our best ofs, ladies and gentlemen.
Mike Terzai announces retirement. sort of came out of nowhere. Definitely felt sporadic.
How much money do you think was actually involved with this decision?
$700,000. Like, so the rumor starts swirling around. Like, my phone started lighting up before I even stepped into the Capitol on Tuesday about the fact that he might be resigning. And everyone's just like, okay, whatever. And then when we got into the Capitol, no, like, everyone was talking about it. Like, he's going to be resigning. So, you know, let everyone know what's going on. You know, because it's Mike Terzai, the House Speaker. Mm-hmm. But what ended up happening apparently is it's speculated that he's taking a job at People's Gas in Aqua America. People's Gas is a distribution facility, they're not a fracking company, but they distribute their utility. Mm-hmm. They distribute gas lines. And then Aqua America, again, is another utility. It's a water utility that does nothing but takes over municipal water sources. You know, it's kind of fitting for someone who's been pushing privatization his whole entire career.
Right, right, exactly.
To work in a company that privatizes utilities and natural goods. So congratulations, Representative House Speaker Terzai. Don't let the door hit you on the way out. The press releases that came out yesterday were phenomenal. Like so, Keystone Progress had a really good one. Dan, all he said was good.
Good. Great press release. That's awesome.
And then, whatchamacallit? So he said good. And then, we had good riddance. Everyone like pretty much don't let the door hit you on the way out. Like it was absolutely hilarious. It was one of the best. Like it allowed people to really just pile on. And no, I mean, what's going to happen now is he probably won't retire until May. So he doesn't have to have a special. So it doesn't have to be a special election. If he were to retire,
I did.
I bet you didn't.
If he was to retire this week, which everyone thought he was going to do, HRCC made him stay on for an extra 3 or 4 months up until after the primary. Because if he would have retired today, there would have been an election being scheduled, and would have most likely been on primary day, and they were probably going to lose that seat. So he's going to wait until after the primaries to retire. Now, this is speculation. This is rumor, but like this is probably how it's going to happen. He's going to wait until May, middle of May, retire, so there doesn't have so that seat can be vacant until all the way through the end of the year until the election day. So this is going to really then someone's going to appoint the House Speaker, most likely Marcy Topol from Montgomery County. She's also on the way out. She's a placeholder. And then there's going to be the real fight at the end of the year. If Democrats don't take back the House, you're going to have a three-way brawl probably between Kerry Benninghoff, Stan Saylor, and Brian Cutler. So,
wait, that's it? Wait, what about,
Daryl Metcalf.
He's not a contender?
I wouldn't say he's a contender.
Oh, man.
But the thing is, it's like people don't realize what happened last year. Daryl Metcalf was promised House Judiciary Committee. And a week before Terzai's chief of staff suddenly passed away, she stopped that from happening. So Daryl's been pissed.
Surprise, surprise.
So Daryl's been pissed this whole entire session. They stuck on the environmental committee, and he's making a mockery out of it as an FU to the Republicans and everyone else, probably. And so, I mean, he's the type of person that holds enough votes that could screw things over in that caucus. And right now that caucus is just shattered into 1,000 pieces. So this could be the type of thing where Democrats might have to give votes to put a House Republican House Speaker over the edge.
My God.
Which means that you're going to get some really good concessions that way. Like, you know what I mean? Like, politically speaking, I'd start gaming this out right now. Like, you know what I mean?
I hope they are.
Because, like, you're a minority caucus, but you hold the most power because you're not fractured like the Republicans are in, like, 3 or 4 different factions.
So just do me a favor, Sean. So just keep on saying that to everyone you know over and over and over again now. Like, basically, this is what you guys are going to need to do and think about now. And you're like, we need to think about that now? I hope they are.
Like, you hold power because you're the most unified caucus in the House.
Right.
I mean, like, you have to look at, like, parliamentary politics at this point. Like, that's how fractured the Republicans are.
Right.
So, that'll be interesting. So, what a week to be in Pennsylvania. I mean, there's weeks I hate being out in Harrisburg, and there's weeks I love being in Harrisburg. This is definitely one of those weeks I just love being in Harrisburg, with Mike Terzai resigning, Mike Stack videos popping up.
Oh, God, that's nothing but a joy.
Yeah.
What a joy. Oh, God. Damn. Oh, God. Well, I have one thing going on here. You remember last week on the show we talked about this kind of, like, really bullshit move that Kutztown University administration pulled right before the beginning of the spring semester. And if you didn't hear it, basically the short version of it is this, is that at the end of the fall semester, there were, I believe it's 7 or 8 non-tenure track faculty, adjunct faculty members who had been full-time. And if you're full-time, basically what that means is that you get benefits and you get, you know, a schedule and blah, blah, blah. You're covered for the contract. Well, they took these faculty members and they bumped them down to 3/4 time, right? And that has the effect of doing two things, right? One, it causes their health insurance to triple, right? So we actually got the numbers, and you're going to see, I'm going to be writing about this week. I've actually already started, so I just got to, that'll be up soon. Their health insurance tripled, right? The number one. But it also, we have a provision in our contract, which means that if you have been a full-time adjunct for 4 years, in the fifth year, you are eligible for conversion if the department votes for it, right? And conversion means from adjunct status into full-time tenure track status, right? And, you know, look, I have to, and I'll say it pretty straightforwardly, is that at Kutztown, we've been fairly successful, at least our department and several other departments have been fairly successful in doing exactly that, especially as the administration has put a freeze on kind of hiring new faculty or has been unwilling to provide the lines, the faculty lines that are necessary in order to be able to teach the classes that students need in order to fulfill their degree requirements, you know, that kind of thing. So we've been using that conversion stuff. But if you, that has to be 8 consecutive semesters of full-time employment, right? So 4 years consecutive semester full-time. So by bumping them down to third to three-quarter time, it breaks that cycle, right? So that's the other kind of just wonderful thing about it, right? So it's a twofer for the administration. And the claim was is that there were they didn't think that there was going to be enough seats available, right? You know, there's not enough students, right? They couldn't teach them. That turned out to be a complete fabrication because right like a week before the beginning of the semester, after, you know, we had been telling the administration this for a while, they've been clamoring by students because they didn't have the classes that they need. So instead of putting some of those faculty members, at least some of them, back up to full time in order to kind of meet the need, the demand for these classroom students, what they did is they increased the class size of people who are already teaching the class, right? So that's what we knew last week. On Friday, during this podcast, right, a couple members of the faculty union have met with the provost of the university, Ann Zayats, they were given a document, and this is what you're going to see in Raging Chicken, my reporting this week. They're giving a document that basically says that their response to new standards and demands from the Pashi chancellor, right? This is going to start sounding familiar. People know the podcast. You know where this is going. Standards, they wanted to right-size the universities, right, and bring them back into alignment with a sustainable future, whatever the hell their criteria is. So they do that, and the administration, and this again, the Provost Ann Zayats, right, and I'm sure the president of Kutztown University, Ken Hawkinson, they're all in on this, right, especially kind of the people over in administration and finance, and they come up with this number, and they basically say, well, in order for us to hit our goal, right, we're basically going to have to get rid of 63 faculty members. Right? 63 faculty members. Okay? That is roughly what? Let me see. Maybe a fifth or a sixth of our total faculty, right, at Kutztown. Okay? So that's bad enough. But then when you look at the way that they made that determination, here's what they did, right? They went back to the year 2010, no, the academic year 2010-2011, right? That was the peak enrollment at Kutztown, right? So that's the time where enrollment at Kutztown University hit historic levels, right? Over 10,000 students, right? We went rapid growth, and you've heard me talk about this on the podcast before. The administration basically artificially kind of like kept hiring down, right? So basically we had kind of larger class sizes, and we couldn't offer all the classes that we needed in order to kind of make sure that students had the schedules that they needed, right? All the classrooms were packed, and many times we didn't have classrooms that could accommodate the number of students that were in the classrooms, all that kind of stuff, right? And the argument the administration gave when we, from the faculty union, when we basically said to them, say, hey, look, we have to, we need to hire more faculty to cover these classes, right? We have some classes that are, for example, we're in classrooms that they're up like violating of fire code, right? Because there's too many people in that class. So, and they said no, because the only reason why we have this big demographic, we have this big kind of hump and increase in enrollment is because we have a demographic bump, right? So they knew when they showed us these numbers that there was a kind of a wave of students that were coming through, right? There was going to be an increase in, and when that was going to kind of level off a little bit afterwards, right? So they knew this ahead of time. Like, they knew this as soon as, like, back in 2006, 2007, they were making this argument to us. Right. So this is where we had to go. And, well, whatever. I'm not going to go into those things. So they knew that was happening. Right. And they had that demographic bump was going to hit there. And they were purposely suppressing faculty hiring. Right. Because they knew that they would, you know, that they, quote unquote, because they care about people, that, you know, they would have to, they didn't want to have to lay off people afterwards. Right. That's what the argument they said to us. Right. And so the demographic hump comes through, and sure enough, enrollment goes up, and then it starts to drop off. Right. Well, apparently collective amnesia came over the entire administration building at that point. Right. Because then now all they could talk about is the enrollment crisis, that we have a decline of enrollment. What's happening with our enrollment? Our enrollment is declining. We don't know. We're hemorrhaging students. And we're kind of looking at them like, but you told us beforehand that was going to happen because of demographics. Right. And they're like, what do you mean? Show us that data. And we're like, you know, so whatever. But the point is, they use that moment, right, the high enrollment, for the point of comparison. And they said, hey, look, in 2010, 2011, we had a faculty-student ratio, I think it was 20 to 1 or 21 to 1 or something like this, right? And that's what – so we need to get to that, because that was a sustainable time, right? And now our ratio is something like 17 to 1. Right? Faculty-student ratio, or student-to-faculty ratio. Right? And so they see that. So we need to get back to the 20-to-1 ratio. Right? And how do you do that? Is you cut faculty members. And the number is 63. So they chose the highest point of enrollment where they suppressed faculty hiring. So we had inadequate numbers of staff to fill the student demand. They used that number as a way to determine what it means to be sustainable today, as opposed to something that's even kind of close and measurable. So that's where we go. So if you recall what I said, and what I said last year when Pashi went before before the budget hearings, and what they said was that, yeah, this year, this means this current academic year, we're going to try to straighten things out, but the following year is when it's going to be a problem. And then we're going to have to, there's going to be some decisions that some people are not going to like. And look, I paid attention to that. You know, that whole idea, when someone shows you who they are, believe them? Right? Well, that's what they did, right? Public record, anybody can go watch the video, anybody can listen to testimony, anybody can read the transcripts, right? That Chancellor Greenstein came forward, and that's what he said. And I keep on saying this to our faculty members. I keep on saying this, whatever, but nobody freaking listens. And you say, like, okay, this, now we're going to be facing it. And sure enough, what the administration does and what they want, because you remember, they have this interest-based bargaining, you know, the unicorn of collective bargaining. Like, everyone, if we just kind of figure out that one little kind of lane where everyone is actually on the same page and is in agreement, and we have shared interest on this stuff, then, like, everything's good. Right, we have this partnership stuff. So what the administration wants from the faculty union and faculty as a whole is they want a partner in terms of figuring this out. Right? In other words, they want the faculty union not to fight back on this. They want to collaborate with the administration to cut 60 plus faculty members. Right? And I'll tell you right now, not happening. Right? So that's what you can look forward to that. You can look forward to this kind of being an increasing fight. And I guarantee you that this is not happening only at Kutztown University. So this goes out to all my brothers and sisters in the union too, as well, in APSCUF union, that be prepared for the fight. We might have a contract now. And I said, as soon as we've got the contract kind of here, then we start going to hear, you know, feel, see when the other boot drops. And sure enough, here we go. So here we go. So game on, 2020. Here we go. All right, that's all we got for the PA Focus. So we're going to turn into this week's last call so I can cool off a little bit before I start kind of really getting pissed. Today we're going to talk a little bit about some TV and some beer and whatever else we got. And the grift. Oh, yeah, we're going to talk about the suit. All right, so this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We'll be back right after this.
This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. For the past 7 years, Raging Chicken Press has brought pull no punches, progressive reporting and commentary to the interwebs. Our long-form investigative pieces, stories that no access journalist wants to touch, or rollicking weekly podcasts strive to advance progressive movements and perspectives rooted in the struggles happening across the country or down the street. We've broken national stories and caused our share of discomfort in the halls of power. If we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. And you can help support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. We need to make sure to keep the movement in the media and the media in the movement. Best way you can do that is to become a member of Raging Chicken today by going to patreon.com/rcpress. Thank you for your energy, your encouragement, and your support. Keep up the fight.
Welcome back to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. It's today's last call. We talk about beer news, about space news, about culture news, and whatever else we feel like talking about. First, I want to give a little bit of apology to everybody. You might find that some of the sound might be a little quirky in some sections. For whatever reason, one of the sound clips, our intro clip, had a very strange kind of sound profile. So I've had to adjust it as been going along, and there's been a couple times I've noticed some spikes in the sound. So I apologize if it's kind of annoying you on your end. So I just noticed that in particular coming into this break. So anyways, this week, I just want to say I'm very excited because last night, yesterday, actually technically at 12:01 a.m. Pacific time yesterday, Star Trek's new series Picard debuted on CBS All Access yesterday. I know. Can you not
believe
it?
Did you watch it yet?
Of course I freaking watched it. Were you kidding me? Like, I had to wait. I did have to wait before my wife to go to bed before I could watch it last night. So I wanted to watch it early. I was going to stay up and watch it, but then I saw it was Pacific time. I'm like, I'm not freaking staying up to 3 o'clock in the morning in order to watch it. I'm not doing that. I'm not that committed.
No, you just set your alarm till 3 and you got up.
Right. Well, yeah, I tried, but I just went back to bed. No. So I loved it. And then I saw this article from Entertainment Weekly, which said it was like a bad beginning or whatever like that. And I was like, whatever, you people, you fucking bunch of haters. I don't want to even talk to you anymore. But it's like a cool story. And I have to say, I don't want to give any spoilers here. And matter of fact, that if this can work out, if we can work this out, we're going to have there's going to be a special addition to the podcast this week. And ideally, this will happen kind of weekly as Picard series rolls out. If you remember, Amy Lynch Binyak, she basically is has worked on temporary faculty issues. She works on kind of at a national level on kind of adjunct faculty rights and kind of advocacy. She's part of our local union, and she's also a huge Trekkie like me, right? So she's watching. She's excited about it. So we're thinking about doing a little kind of short little edition each week. We'll probably post it directly to the Patreon page. It'll be available. It'll be available for everybody, but I'll post it to the Patreon page at least maybe the second week. But hopefully we're going to be able to find a time where we can schedule this. We're going to try to do it this afternoon, but I don't know if we're going to be able to squeeze it in. But we shall see. So look for that. I'm really excited to do a little Star Trek Picard and adjunct labor all in one little blip. It'd be kind of fun. So and other kind of cool other news. There is a student at Kutztown University who's got a radio show there. Her show is called Emmy Knows. And Kutztown University Radio is just getting kind of launched off. And her first show is next Wednesday from 10 to 11 a.m. She invited me to be on the show. We're going to talk about podcasting. We're going to be talking about kind of social movements and new media and a bunch of stuff like that. She told me, I think I said this in the intro, but that one will be broadcast live. I'll have a link into the show notes if you want to check that out live. But she also said it'll be recorded, both for, if I heard her correct, both YouTube and kind of audio that we can kind of send out to you, send a link out to you later on too as well, if you are all interested. So that's pretty cool. Free Will Brewing this week. I should also say, I didn't put this in the show notes, but in the SLS, if you're on the space news, the SLS is the Space Launch System that has been kind of delayed for like a decade. And this is like the big rocket that is actually being, it's by this consortium of kind of McDonnell Douglas or whatever, and Lockheed Martin and Boeing, to put together the system. And they've just basically been grifting the government on it for a long time by having all these delays. Well, it seems like they're finally pushing it, since the getting back to the moon is now a real thing, and they have competition now from SpaceX and Boeing. Boeing is working with the SLS, so, but whatever. They're actually going to have the first test, which is going to be pretty cool. So if that happens, I'll get back to you on that one too as well. But it was just wild to see it on the launch pad and say, wow, they're actually going to test this thing. So Free Will has its first Sour Sunday of the new decade, right? This Sunday from 11:30 to 8 p.m. And that's at the brewery in Perkasie. That's always awesome. They've got the taps filled with all their sours. It's great. And as part of the Sour Sunday, they got two releases. I think it looks like they're waiting till Sunday to release these. One is called My Wild Love. It's a spontaneous sour ale aged in oak casks with blue-free plums from Weiser Orchards. And it's about 1.5 pounds of whole fruit per gallon. And the beer, I'm just going to read the description. The beer leads with aromas of juicy plums and muted oak, followed by notes of bright citrus, finishing soft and dry with notes of plum skin. And it's been conditioned now for over 2 years, right? And that comes in at 4.3 ABV. Everything that I've had that they've done with plums there is just fantastic. So I'm psyched for that. And then, of course, the infamous Peachy McPeach Face. That is a mixed culture sour ale with multiple vintages, up to 3 years blended in age in oak casks with fresh peaches. Juicy, ripe, nectarous peach notes permeate the palate, finishing with a firm, refreshing tartness. And now this bottle that they're releasing has been conditioned now for over 2 years. That comes in at 5.7 ABV. You can kind of check that out too as well. And last but not least, Kitchen's Cabinet Newsletter. Man, it's like, I'm surprised it's not front page out there and Penn Live. It is freaking bringing in the bank. It's catching fire. How was week two, Sean?
It's good. I mean, I'm up to gain a few followers organically, so that's always nice. Picked up my suit over the weekend.
Ooh, the suit.
It was actually pretty funny because Caruso messaged me. He's like, asking my friend Steven from the Capital Star. He's just like, did you like burn on fire, like self-combust as soon as you put that on? I was like, no, man. It was like putting on the ring. You feel the power. He's just like, you're such an asshole.
Putting on the ring. That's great. That's right. That's a good metaphor. I like that, actually. Keep that ring on too much, it begins to take you over. I'm going to start calling that your precious. Sean, did you wear your precious this weekend?
So next week is the winter dinner for the PA Dems. And
winter dinner. Aren't we so clever? We call it a winter dinner.
Well, they have a winter, fall, spring, and summer. It's with the state committee every 4 months.
I know. I'm just being whatever.
So Ro Khanna is speaking there, which is going to be fucking amazing.
That's great.
Definitely looking forward to that next week.
Yep.
I'm actually surprised. I mean, not surprised, but it's nice that they brought out someone like that for the state party, with Ro Khanna being Bernie's campaign co-chair and also a member of the Progressive Caucus. So
that's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. So that should be freaking great.
Yeah. Another speaker is going to be concluding Senator Maria Collette. Leanne Kruger, and then John Fetterman. So that should be fun.
There you go. Nice.
Yep. Getting involved with the establishment.
Look at you. Putting on your precious, going to a dinner. There you go.
Yep.
Suit of power. So what's the tie? What kind of tie you got for it?
What do you mean, like bow tie?
No. I mean, is it, are you doing like open collar? Are you doing tie? I mean, Come on, give us paint us a picture, Sean. Paint us a picture.
Well, no, I mean, like, one of the things I like wearing.
You're going
is,
with a dark shirt. You're going with a light shirt.
Oh, I think like baby blue shirt. Mm-hmm. I like the lighter blues, mm-hmm. so I might do like a blue on blue, like a dark blue tie with a light blue shirt.
See, he's thinking a lot about this, right? Yeah. See this. There you go.
I actually have a lot of ties up here, so we'll see.
What about your shoes? What do you got? What do you got in the shoe department?
Nothing yet.
Nothing yet.
My Adidas.
There you go. I don't think that's going to cut it. I think you're going to have to get yourself, I don't know,
black leather Adidas shoes.
Yeah, you going with wingtips or what?
They don't have wingtip Adidas.
No, but they do have wingtips. Paint them on. You're going to paint them on.
I think it would be pretty funny if I walked in with my black striped Adidas shoes.
That would be funny.
Oh no, people would laugh at that. Like
they would laugh at that. They would laugh at you, I think.
Yes. No, they definitely would.
So you gotta go shoe shopping is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Nice. I hope there's gonna be pictures posted of that too as well. I mean we got the nice little online pictures of your suit.
Right? No, just
with nice highlights of the little checkbox in there. It's like
it'll be funny though, seeing like, oh, this will just turn into a social media spectacle, considering, like, people fucking taking pictures and seeing me in a suit for the first time in 5 years.
That'd be great.
The last time ever I was seen in a suit in public was at Wolf's inauguration.
Yeah.
And I had a couple of people come up to me like, I didn't know you had a suit.
You're like, this is borrowed. Rented it from a cadaver.
Well, it's also, I mean, like, I had a black and white suit from when I was an intern with Abscoff. And I mean, like, black and white is, like, I went to Catholic school. Fuck that shit. Like, you know what I mean?
Dude, I'm all about the freaking Men in Black shit. That's what I do. Black pants, black, got black suit, black shirt, a little contrasting tie. I'm freaking done. Not even the white shirt.
But I'm definitely looking to have some fun with it. I mean, I might need it this year. You never know if I'm going to need it for a job interview or go into a couple events. So
a job interview. Ooh, Sean is like, he knows his newsletter is going to catch fire and pretty soon that he's going to be a wanted commodity from all over the world. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, the kitchen cabinet is launched Sean into the stratosphere of Pennsylvania politics.
But no, it's going to be fun.
Cool, man. Well, hey, that's awesome. So you got anything else going on the weekend?
I'm going to do a couple campaign launch parties this weekend.
Still taking pictures for them and stuff?
Yeah.
Cool.
We'll see. We'll talk more about that offline. But also last week got another campaign photo put into PennLive, which was awesome. Shot a party for someone, which was great. So
yeah. Yeah.
But no, I mean, yeah, it's been busy.
It's been busy. Sean's not used to working like this, I have to say. And it's, but I'm telling you, actually you wear it well. I have to say,
I'm used to hustling from bartending. So,
okay, this is a little different.
Oh, I know. This is not manual labor anymore. This is like
no, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. So
exactly. It's like you got to like, you don't have a schedule that's sitting here. You have to be to work by now, or you're fired. So now it's kind of like you got to have your own motivation now.
Yep. No, it's the type of thing where it's just like, well, I mean, like especially like with the newsletter, like what I've been doing was
it's called Kitchen's Cabinet, right?
Yes.
It's available on Patreon.
Yes. I'm horrible at promoting myself.
I know.
what I've been doing, like schedule wise, is having what I want to have written up ready by like pretty much like Sunday and then just start outlining it. And I mean, and try not to write it Thursday morning, which is what I did yesterday.
I know there was no dessert. I was really upset. There was no dessert. It was like you just kind of stop. It's like, you have this, you're eating this meal, you're going through this stuff. And then you're like, wait, that's it. No, not even a cup of coffee. I mean,
I need to like get into the flow of it, and definitely like I think it's going to take a few weeks to like, yeah. But Yeah, I was sick this week. I had shit happen with my fucking car again over the weekend. Another saga, which is amazing. So I took my car into Monroe Muffler, my sister's birthday, and my parents offered to like pay for my car getting fixed.
Happy, so I had a flat. Oh, I should have had the sound drop now. Happy birthday!
I had a flex pipe that needed to get fixed. So it took forever for them to get the part in. It's been like a month long saga, and it happened. And then they fixed the car, and I went to go pick it up. And when I went to go pick it up, my car wouldn't turn over. And I'm just, I was like stuttering. It, like 5 minutes of just rage stuttering. Like, what the fuck is happening with my car? was my car fine? Like, you're like, what do you mean? It's like, it's not turning over. And you're like, what do you mean it's not turning over? I was like, I'm turning and it's just click, 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 click. Like, so.
It's not turning over. What?
So the crank sensor went and we had a really fun conversation. I mean, their computer system was down. They had to order a part from the Advanced Auto Parts. And I mean, yeah, it took them about 20 minutes to get the part fixed. Another 270 hours later.
There you go. It's always nice.
It's amazing how much these like little plastic sensors cost.
Yep.
Like I never realized like what a crank sensor looked like.
Mm-hmm. I've never seen like, one.
I mean, it's just a little like plastic tube with a metal wire in it. It's pretty much it.
There you go.
Yep.
Cha-ching.
And I was like, Merry Christmas, Mom. She's like, what? I was like, it's $500 instead. But no, I told her, I was like, listen, I was like, I'll help you pay for it. Because like, it's the type of thing with the Monroe. They have a Monroe muffler card. And you spend X amount of money on it, they'll have 0% financing on it for like 6 months.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was just like, listen, tell me what you need and I'll just... Send it over.
I mean, I got this newsletter going now, and it's kind of really bringing in the bank and stuff. So, like, I can help you out with that.
Well, I didn't want to like take advantage of like the crank sensor going. Like, you know what I mean?
No. Totally.
Yeah. So it's just like, fuck.
Yeah. I mean, you know. I mean, it's good for you to do. I mean, you're 30 and all. Mommy's paying for your car. I get it. Yeah, it's
Hey, at least I'm not like living in my home and running for office, okay?
That is true. I hear that might be I don't know. Heads up everybody, watch social media this week.
No, I promised to be a good citizen.
Oh, come on.
With the primaries coming up. I will be posting selfies of myself with others, circulating petitions for Eugene DePasquale.
There you go. Awesome. Cool.
Yeah.
Cool, man. So. Well, hey, well, have a good weekend. My kids are doing, my son has got a sleepover tonight, sleepover birthday party, and then another birthday party tomorrow. My daughter's got a soccer game tomorrow. So my wife and I are kind of drawing straws about who goes where. So for that, so that should be a good kind of a good weekend. Did the basketball coaching this week again. My son's little junior sixer season is starting to wrap up. We got two more weeks left in it. We could do like a kind of a tournament week and stuff, which will be kind of fun. So it's been busy. It's been the first week back to school, and then plus with all the kids' activities and stuff like that, I'm a little worn out today, but. It's good and probably just relax a little bit this weekend. So cool. All right. Well, anything else for the good of the order, Sean?
No, I'm good.
All right. Well, me too. All right. Well, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Want to remind you that you can support all the good work we do here at Raging Media. Raging Media? Sure. Why not? Raging Chicken Media by going to patreon.com/RC Press. That's patreon.com/RC Press and become a member for as little as $5 a month. Keep the movement, the media, and the movement. Just become a member. All right. See ya!
Look, I don't tolerate bullshit terribly well. And I come from a different background than a lot of other people who run the country. I'm not good at backslapping. I'm not good at pleasantries. If you have your birthday, I'm not going to call you up to congratulate you so you love me and you write nice things about me. That's not what I do. Never have. And I take that as a little bit of a criticism, self-criticism. I've been amazed at how many people respond to, Happy birthday! Oh, Bernie, thanks so much for calling. you know, it works. It's just not my style. You know, I try to stay focused on the important issues facing working families in this country, and I fight for them.